Good morning. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Good morning, class. How are you? Welcome to the roundtable panel and our discussion for the next 90 minutes. Very nice to have you with us, and we're thrilled to have you. Now, if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, all you have to do is write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. I was just saying to my colleagues a moment ago that I very proudly completely answered everything in my inbox. My inbox is completely empty.
Really?
And now that will... That will end in about 4 seconds when people start writing.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. You mean to say that you can actually keep your inbox empty at
any
point?
It's all folders. You know, you put things in folders and you know, do that tomorrow.
But then when I go to the folder, there's nothing in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to check that. Anyway, so good morning and welcome. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning, Rosemary, director of the head of the journalism department, right?
Director program.
Of the program. Excuse
Gosh,
me.
Gosh, why can't you get that right?
Because I'm not looking at my script. If I read my script
every day,
if I read the script, it says director of the journalism program at the University of Albany. That's correct.
Perfect.
Okay, so I have to stick with the script. Chris Churchill hasn't been with us for a few weeks, and we're thrilled to have him back.
Glad to be here.
Times Union columnist extraordinaire, doing some great work. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get into what's going on here in our world at large.
And the most important thing is the lockbox.
Yeah. Well, do you want to do that now or do you want to do that later?
Well, you mean it's only once? I'm scared to death. I mean, we're sitting here waiting for waiting for $400,000, and we have to get it in order to get the $10,000 from Jane Kane. You all remember that?
Okay, so it's $256,333 in the lockbox. So that's good.
Not good enough.
Thank you for noticing. So that's about, $143,000 that we need to make to get the $10,000. Now, for those of you keeping a track, about a week and a half ago, we let loose 500 pairs of Capitol Steps tickets for $125 a pair for a special event taking place after the election. Now, we only have less than 100 left, so we're down to the dregs here. So if you want those, you've got to get them.
Yeah, and don't be calling me up and calling me a terrible little man because I can't get you any because you gave money before.
Has anyone really ever called you a terrible
absolutely. Little man? Terrible little man, they've called me.
And what have you done to them after that?
Well, I can't talk about it.
I think another question is, what have you done before that? okay, so WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and $125 for the Capitol Step tickets, but whatever you can put in the whack box helps us get to our goal, and we'll do that again in a little bit. All right, now we're going to get to the topics at large. We begin with the NSA. An NSA contractor arrested in a possible new theft of secrets. A lot of headlines and papers across this country that say, another Edward Snowden? The FBI secretly, my computer secretly
and
moved to another screen.
And this is the important point.
The FBI secretly arrested a former NSA contractor, NSA standing for National Security Agency, in August. And according to law enforcement officials, is investigating whether he stole and disclosed highly classified computer code developed by the agency to hack into the networks of foreign governments. The arrest raises the embarrassing prospect that for the second time in 3 years, a contractor for the consulting company, Booz Allen Hamilton, yes, Booz,
that's the word you
managed
like the
most. To steal highly damaging secret information while working for the NSA. In 2013, Edward Snowden, who was also a Booz Allen contractor, took a vast trove of documents from the agency that were later passed to journalists exposing surveillance programs in the United States and abroad. Discuss.
I
was just going to say my favorite part of the story, of course, is that they don't know the guy's motive, Hal Martin. But the one theory is that he's a hoarder. He just wanted to have a lot of classified information, little piles in his house.
He was identified as Harold T. Martin III of Glen Burnie, Maryland.
Yep. I used to live there. I know the place well. And I can just see this little guy in a tiny little apartment outside of Baltimore with all of his piles of, you know, software and secrets. Didn't contact a reporter that we know, didn't contact a spy, although he may have thought about it or begun it and didn't actually carry through. What was he doing with it?
Okay, but a couple of things here. Was it not a secret court that got involved in this at some point? a secret court that allowed for
a criminal complaint filed in late August and unsealed Wednesday. So that's why we found out about it yesterday. So this happened in August. Is that what you mean by a secret court?
Well, as you know, there are these FISA courts that give permission to do certain kinds of snooping. And there is snooping, obviously, that we are doing in order to get this guy. They were looking at vast troves of information, which I suppose we could say is something that they're looking at with all of us. Is that not right?
Well, hopefully not in the same way as people actually work for Booz, whatever. What are the other two words?
Booz Allen.
Booz Allen, yeah.
Booz Allen. Well, Booz Allen Hamilton, but the short
version.
Booz Allen. Yeah. B-O-O-Z, yes.
I resent that. Okay, so...
Two L's and an E.
The wrong way.
Yes.
So we have given up a good deal of our protections in order to make these kinds of arrests happen.
Now, can I ask? Okay, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give up my freedoms for these kind of arrests to be made. This is Booz Allen as a private contractor who obviously is not screening people. We've had Snowden and now this guy.
Can I ask a question?
Yes,
then? So here's the question, which is, if you've had this problem with this contractor with Snowden, which I would. Let's just say, and without,
fairly cataclysmic, yes.
Yes, was a big deal, right? Wouldn't that put into question your relationship with this contractor?
It should be. And the other thing that I asked immediately before I read all the stories was, okay, how come they didn't put fixes in after Snowden to make sure this never happened again?
Right.
This guy apparently has been hoarding stuff, if you will, since before Snowden went into action. So this has been going on for years that he's been doing
this. But you would
think
that would even be easier
than easier
to track.
Spot, yeah. Yeah. So I don't get that. I don't get why the government has not. Maybe there's no one else that does exactly what Booz Allen does, which is what I suspect. But it's very problematic, and we're not protected anymore, and we've given up freedom for what? If this guy was given to or about to give away secrets to spies, then we actually are in a lot of danger.
Well, maybe you don't do it with an outside contractor.
Yeah, maybe you, like, hire people.
Alan?
What?
Okay. Chris?
Yeah. Sure.
All right.
Glad
we're having a discussion. Yeah. All right. Excellent.
It's also interesting that this guy has not been hit with charges as serious as the ones that have lodged against Edward Snowden.
It's because he's not giving it away, right?
They can't prove what he's done with it. Yeah. And I guess more charges could come later on. But right now, Snowden's still the super bad guy.
And again, is this one of the super bad guy because he actually shared the information? So then this guy is put in a different class in the public. We seem to still be wrestling with whether Snowden is a hero or a devil. But this guy, if he didn't do anything with it and he just took it because it was cool,
well, that in itself is a crime,
right?
As we know, just isn't
sure.
as bad a crime as. Sharing it.
And then disseminating it.
Put it another way, if a guy robbed a bank.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. That's not a good idea.
Put it another way, if a guy robbed a bank and just put all the money in his drawer.
Right, or buried it.
Yeah.
Then,
would that be okay?
Well, no.
Or
but,
if you had a home server and you were putting classified information there, is that the same?
Oh, good question. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue.
I'm surprised
with
you
other...
went there.
It's hard not to. I mean, it's really hard not to. We have these degrees of outrage. Snowden, we're outraged. Clinton, we're outraged. Petraeus, oh, we like him. He's a general. He's okay. I just slap him on the wrist. And this guy, you know, we don't quite know what to do. We slap him on the wrist, but maybe more later.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us and to talk about these issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. I just want the record to show that I tried to start with a non-Trump story, and it went for about 4 minutes.
It was very interesting.
Okay, wow. Now you're ready to move on, right? Everybody just stop the conversation. I'm just saying.
The reason I was not good at it was that I was looking at the mail to make sure that I didn't get yelled at that, you know, somebody should be pre-reading the mail before you read some of these letters. So I was reading the mail while you guys were having what I thought was a very erudite discussion.
And you know why I wasn't prepared? Because you didn't send me the email
no,
last night.
No, I did send it to you, but this guy by the name of, what, Harold Martin, took it and
it's in his bedroom right now,
right,
piled up on
top. Ordered it. Yeah. All right, so... Mike Pence had a debate on Monday night, and Donald Trump took credit.
I picked him.
Donald Trump claimed credit for Pence's debate performance, saying I chose him, and he wouldn't be there if it wasn't for me. And I'm getting a lot of the credit because that's really my first so-called choice. He said that was my first hire. Look at my judgment. Look at what I've done. The single most decisive victory in the history of presidential debates.
That's funny.
I don't love, I don't hate. We'll see how it works. He also said Vladimir Putin. He also made a really big deal about how to say the state name of Nevada, which apparently
he did
incorrectly.
Yes.
And even those in the audience were
yelling
back
at him. Nevada.
What was creepy about that, too, is he was making a very serious point about heroin addiction. And he said something like heroin addiction in Nevada. And then he just pivoted right away from that serious point to this like kind of frivolous thing about
pronunciation.
How to pronounce. And it made it seem like he didn't care about the heroin thing he was just talking about. It was just empty words.
I think
he likes listening to himself, and he likes getting a reaction. And I have to say, being on the radio and people know you, I get it. I understand that. I think he screwed up on Nevada because he just wanted to get that reaction from the audience. And even when he got it, he didn't recognize it as them correcting him. He thought it was more cheering. And as for the I get all the credit thing, Kellyanne Conway, the architect of the pure evil he is, said right after the debate.
Partial architect.
No, she's been very effective, though.
Well, yeah, but then that would disavow the earlier evil before she came onto the campaign.
Yeah, there's been plenty of evil to go around. You're right there. But right after the debate, she went on television in the spin room and was talking about how I think a lot of credit should go to Donald Trump because this proves he can pick quality people, just like he said. And then he takes that point, that talking point from her, and it comes out as I get all the credit, you know, because I'm the picker. But I think the intention was to do exactly what Pence did, was spin all the attention on Trump rather than on the vice president or the campaign manager.
And
so
even
it came out a little wrong.
And even Pence, for his part, at his events yesterday, was doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Of saying, look, I wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for Donald Trump and what he's done.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
I think at the morning meeting, they said, look, all of us have to point it all back to Trump. We're going to all express our admiration for and appreciation of Trump.
Well, the one thing you don't want your vice president to do is upstage you, right?
Right.
And especially with Trump, who's kind of volatile, he might not react well if he's upstage.
Is anyone keeping track of how many times he's threatened lawsuits? So he's now threatening to sue the makers of a commercial that he said was attacking his positions on veterans. He did not specify which commercial he was talking about. And the nominee also alleged that Democratic rival Hillary Clinton has effectively accused police of all being racist, even though she hasn't said that. He urged supporters to register to vote and turn out for him no matter what else is going on in their lives.
Oh, I love that little riff, too. I don't care how sick you are. Last until November 8th, so
I don't
can
care
get out
if you just
vote.
Came back from the doctor and he gave you the worst possible prognosis, meaning it's over and you won't be around. Doesn't matter. Hang on till November 8th and get out to vote.
Get up off your deathbed.
Also a little creepy.
Yeah, very creepy. Alan is very quiet today. I don't know what to make of this.
Well,
Alan, we got 90 minutes.
Somebody get this man some coffee.
Do you want to weigh in on this? No?
1:35 this morning. 1:35.
What?
I weighed in.
Oh. Do you want to weigh in on
this? So is it Nevada or Nevada? And we'll move on to Oregon or Oregon.
this whole idea then, because then let's go to the polls. which is also interesting because we touched on this yesterday. But Donald Trump's support has plunged across the swing state map over the last 10 days, wiping out any advances that he made in September. Oh, Alan, you're ready to talk. That's good. And threatening to undo weeks of Republican gains in the battle for control of Congress. And for his party, Mr. Trump's reversal in fortune comes at the worst possible moment, having muted their criticism of Mr. Trump in hopes that he could at least run competitively through Election Day. Republicans must decide in the next few days, rather than weeks, whether to seek distance from his wobbly campaign.
Where are they going to go? I mean, you know, they are between a rock and a hard place. If, like, Kelly
Ayotte,
if like her, that one.
She's hard to vote for. She's so wishy-washy.
Well, no, that's not the point. The point really is she has to say, well, yes, he's a role model for children. But then on the other hand, if she takes it back and she walks it back, the Trump supporters, and believe me, there are many of them left, now hate her guts. I watched that with a particular assemblyman in the Hudson Valley during the Bill Clinton problems. He said, I could never vote for that man. He lost because, in fact, he was trying to curry favor with some of the others, the Republicans and some of the others. But, in fact, the Democrats just didn't like it. He then won subsequently, and I think he learned a big lesson.
Well, don't you think voters like loyalty, even if yes. it's misplaced loyalty? So Newt Gingrich and Rudy Giuliani have stuck with Trump no matter what. But then there's like the Ryans and the McConnells, whose support is so inch deep
and
that it's not sincere.
All right, Giuliani, take a break, and we'll come back.
I want next up.
Where were you 10 minutes ago? We'll be right back after the short break. We are back. Welcome back to the roundtable. Alan and Rosemary and Chris are all here, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan.
I just wanted to follow up on what we were talking about, and that is the Times had a most interesting story this morning about the idea that Republicans, we talked about it, but the Republicans were in real trouble now, and they don't know what to do. Because one way they get hurt, the other way they get hurt. So it's beginning to look like that the Senate may be in play again. I talked to Richie Neal yesterday, the congressman from the 1st District of Massachusetts, and he was less hopeful from a Democratic point of view that they were going to take the Senate. But I think based on what I read in the Times this morning, it's looking better and better.
Didn't we see those same stories, I don't know how long ago it was, three weeks ago, whenever, when Hillary was having her bad week?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the polls came together, and now he's having his bad weeks, and now they're separating again.
We're also running out of time.
Yeah, that's true. But maybe it'll be whoever has the last bad week, right?
So Neil Newhouse, a Republican pollster, said 2 weeks ago, I would have said Republicans would hold control of the Senate, but there's just so many seats up and nobody is getting separation. It worries me that we're this close to Election Day and you're not seeing that separation because it makes you wonder what kind of impact the top of the ticket has. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know what to make of this. I've been saying that through this whole election season when the conventional thinking is you turn out the vote for the top person and then all the rest of the ticket benefits or not, depending on who shows up. And I'm not sure that voters are that undiscerning. I can't believe that they're not capable of voting for like Hillary Clinton and then a whole bunch of other Republicans lower down.
Well, certainly that's true in some cases. However, remember that we're not talking about all voters. We're talking about some voters.
Yeah.
And if you get a non-traditional voter who shows up to vote for the president, which we know happens in these elections, and they are going to say, who are these other people down there? I do it. In my hometown, I have no idea who the tree inspector is, and I try to figure out what street he lives on, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
This article says if Mrs. Clinton wins, putting Tim Kaine as vice president there to break a tie, Democrats would need 4 seats to take control of the Senate.
Wow.
Officials in both parties see Republican incumbents in Wisconsin and Illinois as likely to lose. So Democrats would need just 2 more pickups to capture the majority if they retain the rest of their seats.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Marco Rubio is hurting them because he's really doing very well.
Yeah, he'll
down
win.
There in
he'll
Florida.
Win Florida. Florida they're not going to get. And so what else? What's left?
Well,
what
the Republicans say that they're really worried about in New Hampshire and Pennsylvania.
And, well, they should.
There's a new poll out. I don't know if it was this morning or last night, but that shows Hillary up 10 points nationally. I mean, if you're up, if she's really up that much, you could see the Senate, I think.
Flip,
yeah.
But you have to wonder, I mean, what, first of all, you like, as we all said, we don't know what's going to happen. And so we tend to say, okay, this is where it is now, and it's just going to extrapolate from there. But we don't know what's going to happen in the next debate.
Mm-hmm.
And will that affect things? But we are about a month away.
Yeah, and the Trump campaign keeps getting outsmarted. I mean, like, they just set these traps, and he falls right into them. You know, I mean, the whole thing with the Venezuelan beauty queen, it just went perfectly for Hillary Clinton. You know, they released that ad on Friday, the one that's running right now, that really, really effective ad,
yep.
Which I think is affecting these polls a lot, because that ad is really, I'm talking about the one where there are like teenage girls looking in the mirror. And
yes, it's very effective.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a father of a daughter, and every time I see that, I want to go give her a hug, you know? So it's like a very effective ad.
Oh, that's
me
so
too.
Nice.
And mine's 32.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine parents around the country are responding the same way to that. But anyway, so they released that on Friday, and then she sets that up with the, you know, 3 days later, she's bringing up the beauty queen at the debate, and then he just, you know, goes on that Twitter thing, and it's just like,
well, you know, and that's the point about people have been saying that his campaign is saying, you know, the media has been making such a big deal about the Alicia Machado and I've heard Jake Tapper and Chris Matthews and so many of the other cable news hosts say, okay, look, but that happened on a Monday,
mm-hmm.
that by all accounts should have died Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. But when you're out there tweeting on Friday about it, you're the one keeping it alive.
I think it would have died even quicker.
In fact, on that Thursday, there was a massive train wreck in New Jersey.
Yes.
It was out of the papers.
Yes.
Until the Twitter started.
Until
he woke up
at 3 in the morning and went nuts.
So I think that the debate on Sunday is incredibly crucial. If he has another performance like he did in the first debate, then you're going to see, I think, polls really changing. Yeah. And it's unusual that she got such a big bounce from the first. Debates don't usually, even if he does exactly what he did.
Well, Rosemary, what would be her big mistake here?
What would be her big
mistake? No, his. I'm sorry. What would his big mistake be in this game?
Well,
if he goes after.
There's going to be another Alicia Machado sitting in the audience. You know, it'll be somebody from the TV show or something who's got a gripe against Trump. She'll be sitting out there. Hillary will reference her.
What about infidelity?
I don't think it hurts her.
He can't win that.
He can't, you know, but he may do it.
He may do
it. It's tough to do in a town hall.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're actually answering questions from voters, how do you pivot to something like that?
Well, you do it very easily. They do it all the time. You get a question, and you tell them about my trip to Spain.
Here's what I think for just 1 minute, then I promise I will shut up. Okay, I'll forget it if I don't.
Please
say it
don't
now.
Do that.
But a town hall meeting is not his forte. Has he ever done one? I don't ever remember seeing him do a town hall. He doesn't like people up close to him.
I mean,
notice he speaks here and the audience is back there. And
he has done the town halls where he is the sole candidate, but not somebody else. How do they pick
the questioners? Do we know?
I don't know.
They're within the debate commission. The questions are heavily vetted, I believe, even by both campaigns as well as
so
no, just the commission. I'm sorry, just the commission.
Just the commission does it. And questions that come from an audience are always different than they come from reporters, which usually you can figure them out.
But
the audience could do anything, and he's not good on his feet.
Well,
but Hillary's vulnerable here too, though.
Because if somebody
in the audience gets up and asks a question about her email server or something like
sure,
that,
and
she
will.
Goes into that real technocrat. Kind of
that would be a mistake for her.
She's got to connect. I mean, it's one thing to
what
seem
she
like
say?
You're being
what should she say?
I don't know. But it's one thing to sound like you're lying to a reporter. It's very different to do it to a voter directly.
I have the answer on the email.
Okay, go ahead.
Hillary just talks like a lawyer. She needs to talk like a person.
Actually,
well, okay.
She should accept some responsibility.
Well,
she always said, I've
noticed
a mistake.
In
I don't want to hear
way,
that
though.
Again.
In a real, like,
she needs to say,
way.
Look, I wish I never did it. It didn't seem that horrible a step at the time. Colin Powell advised me that he did. He did the same. Madeline did.
Because Colin Powell will be on TV the next morning saying I never.
But
told
it's already
him.
Been proved. His email showed that he did. Come on, Chris. Yeah. She won that point.
I think Chris is right because his emails may prove it, but that's a whole different you know.
Look, she's talking about what she thought. I believed, and I think the email shows it, that Colin Powell was doing the same thing. It seemed like the right thing. I had lawyers in place who went through it. I thought that we kept everything. I see now that was a huge mistake. I actually should know a whole lot more about technology. And as president, I'm going to have the best team out there.
So
it's going to be a terrific team.
It's the best. Huge team.
So if a question comes from the audience about Trump's temperament, and then Trump said, well, look at me, and then he deflects to her, and he's the one who brings up the email, then that's a different story, right? Because then she can just brush it off?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to brush off Trump or a reporter. It's another thing to brush off, you know, the question.
Yeah.
But, you know, she has this real ability to connect one-on-one. She does better than that than in press conferences or big news, big events like the convention.
I'll bet she's wishing that she had the same format that she had last time.
Which
she did so well.
Third, right?
Yeah.
She does in the third, yeah. Here's the other thing. Trump has not prepared for this debate any more than he did the last
one. We don't know that.
Yes, we do.
Well, his campaign schedule is very, very packed.
Exactly. And Kellyanne goes, oh, no, he's practicing all the time while traveling. Baloney. Yeah. Doesn't happen.
Yeah. But to go back to the original point, I think it's very hard in that setting to pivot to infidelity. Don't you? I mean, in front of...
No.
Why?
No, because if you're Trump and you are convinced, you know, my twin, Lewis, used to say to me, when the guy is, the social worker, when the guy is saying that he's throwing electrodes through the wall at you, does he believe it? Answer, yes. Question number two, what's the good way to get rid of him? What do you have to do?
I'm not saying he might not try to do it, but I don't think it'll work in that context.
Well, I'm saying he will try to do
it.
You
know, you were talking earlier about the idea of talking about Nevada, of talking about what was it, drug policy, right?
Heroin
addiction, and then shifting to Nevada.
Right.
So you could see the same thing in
absolutely.
He doesn't care about logical flow. This is not transition. No editor's going to.
And he's been threatening for 2 weeks to do this.
Well, it's possible, isn't it, that a voter could bring it up?
They could, and there's so many easy answers for Hillary on this one. On my Facebook, I said, "Okay, you're Hillary Clinton. Let's help her out here with the script." Someone asked you about infidelity. What do you say? And I can't believe the wonderful answers. They were I really regret what I said about those women. I said it during a time of the most pain I've ever felt.
Yeah.
And I want my family to stay together. I'm happy that we are together. But no, I'm not proud of that. How's that for an answer?
That's a bad answer.
How's this for an answer? I'm proud that I've been married to one man for 40 years, and you know, I only wish.
How many did you get?
Right, exactly. And I only wish Donald Trump would have had the same, you know.
Yeah. I don't think she has to keep it on herself.
Yeah.
She this whole campaign she's talking too much about Trump.
Wrong.
Oh, Colin, you sound like Trump.
You're wrong. As my friend from the Eagleton Institute, where I first taught, used to say to me, never apologize. Because if you apologize, now I think in one case you should apologize, and that is on the emails. Email. That was the only time I think it really worked.
When I first went into management, the best advice I got was, Rosemary, learn how to apologize. Learn how to say I'm sorry in all kinds of tones, sincere, flattering, abjectly, because you will be saying it a lot, and that is the number one tool you need to be a good manager.
Okay, let's test it out. Rosemary, you're wrong.
Oh, Alan, I'm sorry you think that.
I think Alan's right on this point, though. I don't think she should apologize for demonizing those women. Because I don't think most voters know that she did it, and I think if she apologizes for it, it blows up into a big thing.
No,
I think she gets the question, and she talks about her own personal vulnerability and, you know, the impact it had on her.
She should really...
But she doesn't bring up the fact that she had a role in kind of besmirching those.
I think that we all know that she called Monica a bimbo. Many of us agreed with her on that. And I don't think she should not apologize for that. Women should not be calling out other women in a campaign where Donald Trump has made a point of denigrating women. She wins a point by saying that, by standing together with other women.
See, I actually do think it's a legit campaign issue. I just don't know how. I don't think.
Why?
How do you think it's a legit campaign issue? Wow.
Because she's accusing him of misogyny, and I think you can very clearly accuse her of the same thing. I mean, the bimbos, that's misogyny.
I don't see that.
She spoke out against women who directly impacted and threatened her family.
And who but are they were, also they're also selling their story. They were
exactly.
selling
not
their
in all cases. Not in all cases.
Yeah, but a lot of the cases that
what,
a lot of the
what
cases,
cases were not. It was Paula Jones, it was Jennifer Flowers and Monica Lewinsky.
No, but it goes on way before that. I mean, there are stories about before Bill Clinton ran for president, them calling woman after woman after woman after woman into the Rose Law Firm to get them to sign, you know, waivers that they would never talk about the affair. And some of the women may have felt intimidated.
That's not denigrating
no,
women,
but
though.
That's not, that's, it is a form of misogyny, right? I mean, I guess it depends on where you see Bill Clinton on the spectrum. If he's, if he turns out to be a Bill Cosby type and she was protecting him all these years, then that's a serious thing, don't you think?
Well, I think having an affair is different than serial rapist.
Well,
yeah, I don't say. I mean, he wasn't drugging women.
Well, we don't know what he's doing. We know one thing.
He was accused of rape.
Any kind of reporter.
He was accused of rape,
well,
and the Washington Post investigated that and thought that there was some. They weren't able to completely discredit her, say that much.
Well, but I'm pretty sure that enterprising reporters have been following Bill Clinton all over the place, because that would be a hell of a story right now if they could show it. And apparently, he's either on a very short leash or has.
Oh, I think he's run out of steam now. These are the Arkansas.
He doesn't look too good.
About. No, he doesn't sound good either.
Well, and he said that these. Saying crazy things about Obamacare, and well, he's saying Obamacare
that was
is crazy.
Very careless. Stupidest things that ever happened. Careless.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, President Obama's approval rating 55%.
Obama?
Yes. Yeah.
This country is nuts. We like our politicians when they're not running. Joe Biden, let's look at Joe Biden. He's so popular. He's run several times for president, did terribly. Hillary Clinton, approval ratings when she was Secretary of State. Out of the ceiling. Then she starts running. She announces her ambitions, and we begin hating her. It's very weird.
President Obama's approval rating when he was first elected was 56%, and it's now 55%. So he is almost equal to where he was when he was first elected president, just for the record. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We want to get to some letters, and we will do that right now.
Okay, Aaron says he doesn't like the way we're saying the word Nevada.
Well, I still don't know if it's Nevada or Nevada.
Rachel Maddow did a whole show on it, and it's Nevada.
Nevada.
Nevada. That's
Nevada.
Right.
Nevada.
And it's Oregon.
Okay, and then,
Rachel Maddow, she's my source.
And then Patrick says, people who have had three marriages and multiple infidelity should not cast stones. And then Sheila says, why are you even talking about this? Trump controls the roundtable conversation. Might as well read the Inquirer instead. And maybe someone should look up the definition of misogyny. I think she's probably wrong on three counts, but, you know, I'd say at least two. One of them is we have to talk about this. If Trump, who is running for president of the United States and who might lead this country down a particular road, which some people say would be close to, you know, fascism, other people say would be great. I said that just to protect it myself. We have to talk about it. We can't ignore it. What are you talking about?
This is the election we have, like it or not, you know.
And I defer to Rosemary on her request for a definition of misogyny.
I think I know what it means, but it's always a nice look up. But we looked up yesterday the word feckless, and it had levels of meaning that were interesting to hear. So
yeah, I know Joe'll be looking.
I'm
it
never
up.
Opposed to using a dictionary.
What am I looking up?
Misogyny.
Oh, okay.
Right now, Joe's gonna look it up for us. He's very good with that machine.
Yeah. Dislike of, contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against women.
There you are. And I think...
And right after that it says Trump. See Trump.
This is picture.
Yeah, there's a little snapshot, a little thumbnail right there.
So does Hillary have an ingrained prejudice against women because she attacked and used her lawyerly skills to put her rivals out of business?
And Larry says,
her rivals.
Rivals for Bill's affections.
And Larry says, no subject. There are many circumstances that can bring down a marriage. Infidelity is just one of them. It is the recommended approach that the parties try to reconcile and save the relationship. Is Mrs. Clinton to be chastised for deciding that her marriage was worth saving? Donald Trump took the easy way out and just started over twice. It's kind of like the way he used the bankruptcy laws. They were designed to help a sinking business, but he used them as a tool to save nothing more than his fortune. With his marriages, he used the divorce court as a tool also.
That's the thing.
It's not about trying to save her marriage. It's not about... her marriage, great. She saved her marriage. That's a terrific thing. But it's also about saving her political career. I think that's the part that bothers people. When you pressure women to not say what turned out to be the truth, that's problematic, and I think that's a legit part of her record.
One correction, Rosemary, says Miguel, regarding liking our politicians when they're not running for office, especially presidents. G.W. Bush's approval rating was 22% when he left office in 2009.
What is it now? We still excoriate him. He's not allowed to go out and campaign. I guess he did a little for Jeb. Didn't do any good.
Well, I think that's probably what the writer was trying to point out, that when Obama goes out at the top of the heap, or when Bill Clinton, who I think at the time he retired was number one ever, and that's after having been impeached, so that those things mean something.
Obama seems to be benefiting, too, from the current campaign. I think people are looking at him and contrasting him to the two candidates and wishing that he could stick around a little longer.
Yeah.
Kevin says, how Trump will win the millennials. The millennial vote is a highly coveted voting bloc if they vote. During the primaries, this group strongly supported Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton. Many have assumed that based on this, they will vote overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton as they're opposed to Trump on a variety of issues. Current polls show Clinton getting 37% of the millennial vote and 29% for Trump. Yet the gap is narrowing. Could Trump win the millennial vote? If so, why?
I doubt it, and I don't think they're going to vote. That's the problem. Yeah. They don't get out and vote.
It's always been the case. Yeah. I mean, I've taught for 40 years, and I got to tell you, I'd excoriate, I'd yell, I'd scream. You'd say, okay. I remember once in a class, I said, okay, what happens if a politician votes what you consider wrong on the abortion debate? And they all started yelling, we'll throw him out. But I had already just asked them, how many of you voted the last time? And the answer was none. Maybe one guy in the back, or how many of you knew who your legislators were? They have no idea. Too bad, because I spent my life trying to correct that.
I think Obama was successful in getting them out both times, but I don't know that Hillary's going to have that same sort of pull.
She's using Michelle Obama and Bernie Sanders to try to do that.
And Al Gore, apparently.
Al Gore's going to come out this weekend. It is kind
mistake.
Of interesting.
That was a, yeah, that
mistake.
He's popular with millennials who care about the environment a lot.
I don't believe it.
Well, he does have credibility on that one issue, which is important to millennials.
And it's not being talked about by most of the main players in the.
Is that Al Gore who moved away from Clinton at when he was running for president and thereby lost the election? That kind of judgment.
He paid for that mistaken judgment, Alan.
And well, he should have.
Nah, we all paid for it, that mistake.
Well,
judgment.
You make a point, Rosemary. Nan says, did not Trump have his ex-wife silenced through the legal agreements also? I assume money was involved.
I'm not saying that Trump is some sort of, we should put him up on a pedestal for the way that his marriages have happened. I'm just saying that Hillary's treatment of the women who accused Bill is fair game.
Tom says, bingo. In capital letters, she did it to save, protect her political career. And that's from Tom, maybe.
What is so wrong? Bill and Hillary Clinton have this marriage that's all about politics. They talk about it night and day. They brought their daughter up in it. They both have long careers in
Franklin
it.
Franklin and Eleanor.
It's like Franklin. It's part of the reason they have stayed together is that they have this commonality of interest and a sense of purpose. Why is that a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing, but it doesn't give her the right to destroy people who her husband has had affairs with.
I am getting your point, Chris, that she's vulnerable on this, but that's not what the writer is saying. He's saying that she only protected Bill because she wanted to be president.
Are you sure all of those women weren't milking this thing for all it was worth?
Well,
yeah, I'm not. Yeah. And it isn't just politicians. Tiger Woods was.
Why are you blaming these women though? I mean, Bill's the one who had dozens and dozens and dozens.
Saying, yeah.
I mean, he created this mess. It's not to blame the women. Just seems kind of.
Or to blame
and
her.
Hillary is one of the women.
Yeah. Or to blame her.
Right, but But she doesn't right. have to. She doesn't have to take the step of. She could just step back and say, "Listen, this is your mess to clean up. I'm not
Chris,
playing a role in this."
Chris, I have a piece of advice for you. Don't write that column.
I'm going to just to show you.
Take that off the list, Chris.
You tried it out. It didn't work. Okay.
To try all my columns out.
trial balloons. Yeah. See how I go.
All right. Do you want more or not?
Yeah, we have 30 seconds.
Okay. Arlo says, not that Arlo. Everywhere I drive, I see Trump signs in front yards, but no Clinton signs. Are those of us who will vote for her afraid to embrace her?
No, they're hard to get. I myself have sent away for them. They now are in my yard and my sister's and anybody else who wants them.
You have to pay for them too, right?
Yeah, well, you make a donation, which is fine, but you can't get them in Albany County.
Yeah.
Because, and here's why. That great ground game she has, they figure they don't have to deal with New York because mm-hmm. she's going to get New York. So they're sending all the signs, all the effort, and that is going to Ohio and Florida.
That's interesting.
Yep. Yep.
It's like that in other states, though, too.
There's a good column, Chris.
There you go, Chris. There's your column.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't we a factory of ideas for you? All right. We would love your letters. We're going to continue for another half hour. We welcome you. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan and Rosemary and Chris are here.
And Joe.
We'll be back after this. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And let us go to just some other issues. Do we leave anything in disarray before we left?
Who remembers?
Okay, yeah, who remembers? We had an exciting break, so we don't remember any of that.
What happened that was so exciting?
Well, we met a star. We
want to tell everybody who the star was?
Gabby, a movie star walked
Gabby,
in.
Gabby Hoffman, who is in Transparent and was in Girls and as a child. Sleepless in Seattle, Uncle Buck and Field of Dreams, is in one of our studios doing an interview for Fresh Air. And so we saw her through the glass, and she came in and she listens. She listens in the...
She's a fan of our show, as we are
cool
of her.
It was very, very fun. So we had a good time. So... So
that's why we don't know what we're doing.
We don't remember what the hell we were talking about.
We're flummoxed.
So we were talking about the effect of the Trump slide on the down ticket races. We had that discussion. So
yes,
now
did.
Let's talk about editorials. The editorialists have spoken. The question, will voters listen? It seems like we have this question every 4 years, but this year is a little bit different because there doesn't really seem to be any major news outlet that has endorsed Donald Trump.
And I think that's the story, Joe.
Yeah.
I don't think Rosemary...
The Atlantic, for goodness sake.
Yeah, right. Now, Rosemary has made this point again and again. People don't listen to editorials in terms of who to vote for, but I think they do. And I don't think it's all the people. I think it's marginal people who pick up the paper, the Times Union, for example, your excellent paper, Chris, and say, well, they endorsed, so that must be so. I don't know either of them. I'll go with the Times Union choice. I think there are some people who do that. But I think the big story here is that no one, no daily paper yet is endorsing Trump. Then people start to write stories about that. And that's a big thing, I think.
And there are a lot of very Republican papers out there that have never not endorsed the Republican candidate.
Sure.
Who, you know, the Manchester Union Leader, for example, I think they endorsed Gary Johnson.
They did. Three newspapers in America have endorsed Gary Johnson. I'm sure they regret it and probably.
Well, I think one actually
well, it was better than endorsing Trump.
One actually took it back, I believe.
I'm not surprised that Gary Johnson. Wow, what a flame out! Even his vice president now has come out basically endorsing.
You know,
Hillary
that flame out is actually kind of important because Hillary's kind of uptick in the polls is kind
it's
of coinciding with
with
his downtick.
Yes,
I think
true.
She's picking up a lot of those people.
Well,
okay,
I disagree,
surprisingly, with Alan on this. We talked about it a little bit
that
in this week's media project, but I would love for it to be true. I would love for newspapers to have influence. I don't think they do. Even this massive switch to Trump, people who love and support Trump will simply see in this proof that we're biased. We're all ganging up on Trump. Millennials don't even read newspapers. They don't even read stories about how all the editorials are against him. So I think it's ineffective in moving anybody towards Hillary and effective in a negative way, proving to people that we're biased.
Yeah, I think it could backfire a little bit. It does kind of heighten his anti-establishment credentials a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people at any of these publications think they're going to impact the race, but I think they all want to be on the record as being as standing up against this before it happened.
The Murrow effect. They want to be the ones who said, we didn't just let Joe McCarthy ride. We held him to account.
Well, yeah, but they waited a damn long time till Ed Murrow did the right thing.
They did.
You know, and had all of that courage.
And that's why the Washington Post came out with their extraordinary anti-Trump editorial right after the conventions, way before endorsements normally come out.
Mm-hmm. But I think editorials do matter in kind of less publicized races where people aren't making up their own minds so easily. Don't you think?
I mean, yeah. I read editorials in those races to find out stuff because I haven't done all the research that I have on this race.
So, for example, has your newspaper, Chris, to your knowledge, now endorsed either either the people in the 19th congressional district, John Faso?
I don't believe so. No.
Ms. Teachout.
Yeah, no.
No, they haven't. I think that's going to be a big endorsement because there's a 1% difference in the polls right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it would be, but I'm thinking more of like even less obscure races, you know, judges and things like that, where people really go into the ballot box and don't know very much about the candidates.
Yeah.
All right. everybody, okay.
Well.
My question when it comes to endorsements, though, is that, I mean, again, sort of the safety in numbers. So if you are, what does it tell us that prominent members, former presidents, prominent members of the Republican Party and no media outlets have? I mean, does that in any way help Trump?
I think it does. It's because he's running as this kind of anti-establishment and that's all the establishment.
I couldn't disagree more. I think because of all of these, I'm not doing it just for the hell of it, there, Chris. I'm just simply saying because so many of these newspapers have lost what we used to consider a certain kind of objectivity because they see this guy as so dangerous. That they're willing to do that. The New York Times, for example, has done it in spades. It really has. And they are been very, very tough. And when you turn your radio on sometimes, look, every kid isn't in a car. Yeah, they listen to podcasts and they do this and that. But every once in a while, they'll turn on some news that'll come in and somebody will hear the Washington Post today endorsed or so in the Daily News endorsed or the New York Post endorsed. Those are things that will influence people.
Yeah, but I don't think people sometimes they don't like being told who to vote for or what to think. And if it starts to seem like you're piling on a little bit too much, I think it can backfire. I think you saw a little bit of that with the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
Right? Where you had President Obama and other people coming in to tell the British people how to vote, and they kind of resented it a little bit. And I think you can start to have that effect.
Well, there are differences between – I think there's legitimate differences between the Brexit vote.
What are the differences?
Well, because I think the Brexit vote had two sides to it, two really persuasive sides, where I think in this election, newspapers are convinced that if Trump were elected, we would be going down a very dangerous and bad path, which is why you hear the maybe sometimes inappropriate Hitler analogy or fascist analogy that so many people are raising because they think this is possible.
It's not just newspapers either. I mean, it's like it's conservative people like Glenn Beck, you know, people with big audiences who are not on the Trump train.
I hope you're all right. I just don't think you are. I think people turn off news programs. My students know none of this. They are not listening to the Glenn Becks or the newspaper editorial writers.
Wait. Are you
and
telling
they are
me that
kind
you're
kind of proud of just doing something that everybody in authority, everybody in establishment is saying you shouldn't do? I think they love that.
Wait. Are you telling us in this room that your students aren't overwhelmingly against Donald Trump being elected president of the United States?
Oh, they're against him, but they don't
so
plan
some,
to vote.
Well, but somehow that permeates into their brains. Somehow they have taken those clues from somewhere. And I think the fact that in the mix is the media, I think is very important.
Mm. Trump is all over. I think he's bypassed the political establishment and the press. And that has won him supporters and has turned off a whole lot of young people who are on Twitter.
I don't think he's bypassed the press. I think early in the campaign, he was really effective at using the press. I mean, he used free media to get where he is.
the free media, Chris, was like gavel-to-gavel coverage of his rallies without any journalistic content. There was no journalism in that. He got free airtime, and he did
it by dint of being, and he still does.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's why you see Hillary's poll numbers start to dip a little bit whenever there's not a big event, and then when there is a big event and she actually emerges from the darkness and people see her again, she goes up a little bit. But it's almost like he sucks all the air.
This show is proof of that. We try to talk about other things. And we do, and we finish it up quickly and then get back to Trump.
Okay, but what's more important?
What are we going to do without him?
I know.
We should be mourning the days.
But what's more important than this? I mean, what is more important than this election for this country?
Or for the world, really.
I just want to go to Syria. I know I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but let's say Donald Trump doesn't win. He's not going away, right?
Right.
I mean, he's going to be in our narrative and in our discussions, I would assume, for a very long time. And I think that's a really big question mark out there of what his role will be.
Sore loser. He's going to be seen as a sore loser and dismissed.
All right. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, he's got a core of people, right? It may only be 20% of the electorate, but that's enough.
Or maybe 40% of the electorate, and it always has been.
I don't think it's that many. I think there's his core, hardcore people are, what, 20, 25%?
Well, but there's a 40% that is are what we call, might call conservationists. They're interested in the acquisition of wealth or the potential for the acquisition of wealth. And they're going to vote Republican every time, no matter what.
Right, but those people are just Republicans. They're not Trump diehards.
I see the distinction.
I mean, some of them are just voting for him because he's the Republican candidate and they're going to vote for the Republican, but they're not going to follow him off the cliff after the election
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with it. They will not follow him off the cliff. They will not be lemming.
A lot of them are very, very reluctant as it is.
Don't you think it'll be kind of Palin-esque?
Yes.
Well, he's already put a smear on the future. Pence is now a politician on the national stage. That was not true before July.
No.
So he's already had an effect. He has changed fundraising. He's changed I think you're going to see primaries change because of him, the rules for primaries. I think he's going to have a long-term effect.
But Pence is just a very traditional Republican, right? I mean, if Pence is the next nominee, it's almost like a return to form. It's not a continuation of Trumpism.
And they're going to change the rules. They're going to change the rules, I guarantee it. So this kind of thing will not happen again in the Republican Party.
So how do you change the rules to make that happen? I mean, does it start essentially
super
not having 17 candidates?
Well, it might be superdelegates. It might be who gets into, as you just suggested, who gets into the debates, where you're putting the line. It might be any of those things, but believe me, they are hard at work in doing this. They have a real advantage in that the next time, not this time, this time the Senate looks vulnerable. The next time it's the Democrats who are going to be vulnerable. And therefore they're going to have to change their ways and in off elections, by the way, that's when the Republicans always make their gains.
And the interesting thing about Trump post election is the possibility for some sort of
Trump. I'm sorry, we're watching TV and Trump is participating in a town hall tonight. He's practicing.
That's interesting. But anyways, it's him going off in a kind of a media landscape direction with Bannon and Sean Hannity and starting their own network. I mean first of all, it would really harm Fox, right? Which is
the numbers are for commercial radio stations, which are now in large part run by conservatives, have been dipping and dipping and dipping. The numbers for public radio have been going up.
Yeah, but I'm talking about cable TV, though. I mean, isn't Fox News? Fox News is the most watched cable network. If he takes some of that audience away, it will just gives him a platform to continue. He may not have that much of a platform 2 years down the road if he doesn't have his own network.
It also pushes Fox, Chris, because he would take up the super right. So where does Fox go? Are they redundant or do they move into the center? So I think that would be interesting.
I think because of the kids, they are moving towards the center. The way that I see the Murdoch empire developing is that I want to be very careful here, but Roger Ailes is gone. Some of the Ailes supporters, for example, in the Albany area, are gone. The station is is the Fox Network is obviously going to follow the kids now, not Rupert. And I think that, therefore, Rosemary, they are going to be more temperate about the way they do things.
All right, let's get to our last topic, and one that I found very interesting. How long can we live? What is the ceiling on human longevity?
I just hope we could live forever.
According to the new poll.
I thought it was forever.
For the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. 115 years.
Yeah, which is down, by the way, because 123-year-old lady.
A woman died at 122. So that from now on, this is it. Humans will never get older than 115,
and
according to this new study.
And this has set off a real firestorm on all sides. You know, people on one side are saying, no, we'll continue to evolve just as we've been evolving all along. I think that's true. They're going to give you new skin. They're going to give you new eyeballs. They're going to give you new hair. They're gonna be able to do
but
all of that
true,
stuff. Yes.
If true, that means I could work for you for another 50 years.
I'm afraid so.
But
if
that's
true,
but if they've replaced all of Alan's parts, is it still Alan at that point, or is it an entirely new person?
Just a brain in
he
a
has
jar,
new
as
eyeballs, and a new brain, and everything.
I come from a really...
It'll still have a baseball hat. Don't worry about it.
I come from a really long-lived family. My mother's about to turn 91. Why do we want to live that long? It's really hard. Old age is really hard, and we never talk about it in our culture. It's
no,
like, oh, I want to live to be 100. It's really hard.
I know some people do.
You know? Well, there was quite a bit of writing done 2 years ago about how 75 was optimum, Alan, that by that time you'd accomplished everything that you wanted to. You were still relatively
presidential
healthy.
Presidential candidate.
Yeah. That 75 was what we should really
aspire
to. Well,
some people...
so what are you supposed to do after 75? Just give up?
Yeah. And what about guys like Bill Clinton? You think he's giving up?
How old is he?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter.
I had that question just the other day.
There are always new objectives.
Well, when you say 75, it's not like, okay, you're going to go then be killed at 75. You can't live longer. But that's the general rule, and it probably varies for different people. But to aspire in general to live forever to 115 or 123, man, I don't want that.
Well,
we're going to hold you to that.
Yeah, but
it's
that's
true.
You.
I don't. I hope I'll have the courage if I ever have to make some choices.
I know an old lady used to walk around with a vial of Seconal in her hands, and she'd say, I'm not going to a nursing home. This is my nursing home, you know, the vial of Seconals. But she ended up in a
that's
nursing
so
home.
That's so cool.
This is turning into a very depressing episode of the round table.
How'd she get the Seconal? That's not so
she
easy.
She collected them one at
a time. Wow. Saving them for her old
Maybe
age.
Maybe this added half hour isn't such a good idea. Go to dark places and.
Look. What could be more interesting than how long we live?
How long we live?
I mean, I think. Look, what are the great crises in people's lives? There have been studies on this. Being fired is one of the top crises that it's hard to recover from. Another one is the fear of death. People fear death, we know that, and Freud wrote on it a great deal.
I want them to cure arthritis, okay? That's
They'll
all
do
I
that.
Want.
Are they going to do that?
Just cure it. I thought the baby boomers would not move into old age until that was taken care
no,
of.
No, they're going to take
the
care of
pure
that.
Pure pressure, you know, of our demand.
They'll would. Take care of that.
When?
Soon.
I need it now.
It's coming. It's happening. Now, all the medical advances.
You get your new eyeballs. That'll be part of them.
You saw the guys who just won the Nobel
your bones
Prize.
Feel better here.
Yeah.
You saw the guys who just won the Nobel Prize in medicine, right?
Right.
They 1/100th or something of a hair. They could make a machine that affects your body, and it's just unbelievable.
Well, there could be some sort of drugs too. You know, it's growth hormone drugs that keep you vibrant longer too, right?
Okay, I want those too.
Well, now might be the time.
Okay.
All right.
Medical Monday. We're doing this show for them.
Letter or two you want to read?
Oh, sure, Joe, whatever you say.
Round off the time, yes.
Okay, so, boy, we got a lot. Reach 75, get thee to an iceberg. Reach 75, get thee to an iceberg. Okay.
All right. Biogenically yours.
Okay. No, I don't want. Oh, that's sick. They cut off your head and freeze it.
Okay, and Richard says, Trump, go ahead, Trump. The Trump Network may it live as long as Trump Steaks, Trump University, and Trump Airlines.
There's an article in the Times this morning where a third of his businesses have failed. Of the ventures.
Dear panel, I think media endorsements do matter. It's not just the public that is influenced. Politicians running for office, congressmen trying to get reelected, for example, have to decide whether they come out in favor of Trump or not. Seeing all these big conservative endorsements by, for example, the Atlantic magazine and other papers who have never come out against a Republican candidate, they will be influenced and that old bandwagon effect will start. And let me tell you something, folks. That is true because we know at Chris's newspaper and others like it, they when they're invited to come in for an editorial
conference. True. They do want the endorsement, so it must mean something.
They want that endorsement.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And then they're going to, you know, put it where it is.
They use it a lot in advertisements.
What was the second part of your point?
Peter says, Peter says, Alan will be laid to rest in the lockbox.
Which, by the way, is $256,000. It needs a lot more. WAMC.org. We're out of time. Thank you very much. We'll be back on the other side.